Get ready for an all-new Hardline segment. It's time to step into the snake pit. And now, with something completely over the top, the host and star of the Snake Pit, Snake.
Oh, yeah!
That's me.
Darn right it is.
All right, so today we are here to investigate. Now, we never talked about the Bee Gees documentary that came out a couple of months ago. It's fabulous. It's stupendous.
Is it?
It's so... So you would love it, dude. It's such a great look at that band, but that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about this country, society in general, the world, turning on certain institutions for what seems to be very few reasons. Like, it just happens overnight, it's the way it is, and then you love something, and then you're told that that thing sucks, and you're like, yeah, I know, it sucks.
Everybody likes it. Too many people like it, so it sucks.
Yeah, so let's just move on. And,
okay.
And not only do you move on, you look at what you've turned on.
As an embarrassment.
Yes.
That you ever liked it to begin with.
And you would never, and then it's, I never liked that. I don't know what you're talking about. I never liked that.
Until maybe 25 years later, and you look back and go, you know what?
Yeah.
That was actually pretty good.
You have a little bit of perspective, and you say, yeah, this wasn't so bad. Well, for whatever reason, there's a history of the United States turning on certain musical institutions. And at the forefront of it, I think, is disco, of course. And for those who weren't around during the disco era, it popped up in the mid-70s. Dance clubs became this huge part of American society. And disco was a huge part of it. It was a driving force. It was the beat that carried everybody around back then. There was still rock and roll. And it lasted for about 4 or 5 years, but then for whatever reason, there was this backlash. And the backlash still to this day doesn't make a lot of sense to me, because it's not like disco was worshiping Satan or, I mean, it was just music, it was dance music.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, in 1980, 1981, someone or a group of people just said, that's over with. We're finished with it, and so not only are we finished with it, we're going to bury it. And I don't ever want to hear anything about it, and if you are affiliated with this in any way, your life and your career is over. This was the first example of it.
Okay.
And Danny pulled a couple of cuts from the Bee Gees documentary, and they're all really good in explaining just kind of what went on and why we turned on something so quickly, something that America seemed to embrace and love. And even if it kind of waned a little bit through the years and just never was as popular, that would have been okay, but that wasn't the case.
Right.
This was get the pitchfork out, get the torch out, and say, never again.
And you say that's uncommon with other things that, like in the music world?
To this extent, well, I mean, we're going to get to a couple other examples.
Okay.
But this was really the first one. And again, maybe I'm blocking out something that happened in the jazz world.
Right.
Or, you know, I don't know, but this was the first public open example that I can,
okay,
that I can remember. So here is some explanations on exactly what happened in the world of the Bee Gees.
It all goes back to one thing, and the same thing that's happening now, greed. Greed is the thing that happens in people that really ruins a lot of shit. In the beginning, you would buy a disco bannered record and it would be a great song, no matter which one you picked out. But then, some executive in diapers decided, let's put disco on all these records we want to sell. And it wasn't good music anymore. It was garbage.
So it became too much.
It was too much. The people saw how popular disco was,
mm-hmm,
and the Bee Gees were at the forefront, but they weren't writing music to be under that umbrella. They were writing pop hits that were dance. It was dance music.
Yeah.
And they discovered that falsetto thing and had a really incredibly unique sound. But then
They were a rock and roll band before any of this.
Yeah.
Okay.
And kind of a folky rock band. They went through a lot of incarnations and style. But what happens is people that want to make money off of a scene or a thing, They put out watered down versions of it and copycat versions of it, and everything is marketed with disco. They showed an ad with Burger King. Let's disco down to Burger King, and it's a disco Burger King song. You had Rick Dees with the Disco Duck song that's playing in the background under that actuality, and it just became cheesy and uncool in a way for corporations to make money.
Novelty songs, so Kung Fu Fighting, so and things like that.
Yeah, so if your stuff was played in those clubs and on the radio, it became all of it. It was part of the problem. When the problem was only people wanting to exploit it and make money for it. The Bee Gees wrote great damn songs.
Oh, yeah, they did.
The Saturday Night Fever soundtrack, their contributions hold the F up. They're great tunes.
And the thing is, it's not just about moving away from something. This is about trying to kill the careers of people. And that's what I don't understand. I don't get it. And so here they are talking about their lives after disco, where, you know, again, like Danny said, they're just writing songs.
Yeah.
It's all they're doing.
They weren't trying to capitalize on a scene.
No. They're writing songs. They specifically wrote songs for this soundtrack and this movie, and it blew up, and so be it. And here is their life after things started to go south.
Ironically, the soundtrack to Saturday Night Fever, the album that made them superstars, also branded them as a disco group.
Because you can dance to it, I mean, it doesn't necessarily make it a disco song. I mean, you can dance to lots of songs.
You really don't want to be labeled disco do you?
Because our music is a variety of different kinds of music. It shouldn't be called just that.
So people hated disco. Hated it.
We had FBI and Secret Service around the airplane every time we landed in a certain place because of the bomb threats. That's scary stuff.
We were perplexed, because I got that vibe from them. You know, why are people doing this?
The Bee Gees claim some radio stations around the country are refusing to play their new single.
The Bee Gees are not allowed to have a hit because they had a lot of success with Saturday Night Fever. That, to me, is crap.
Radio is, of course, very difficult to get back once you lose them. Back then, if you weren't on the radio, there was nothing.
Let's all grow up. We're just a pop group. We're not a political force. We're just making music. I don't think there's any reason to chalk us off because we existed in the 70s. And we would like to exist in the 80s, you know. Does anybody mind if we exist in the 80s? Thank you.
So they would go to restaurants and people would, I mean, they were treated like he was saying, like political figures. Like just people shaking their head at him, you know. And these were, they're really cool guys or super nice brothers. Yeah, and they're like, why is this happening? It's okay for you to not like the music, but you're looking at us like we just killed your grandma.
Right, like we ruined your life somehow.
So disco ruined the careers of a lot of people. And like Danny was saying, at least 25 years after the fact, people realize like, oh man, that was really S-y of us to go about things this way.
You remember the Disco Sucks t-shirts when we were kids?
Absolutely.
They were everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, like the Disco Demolition Night, which right here.
People, the largest crowd of the season showed up at Chicago's Comiskey Park. Many had come for Disco Demolition Night, a promotional gimmick. 15,000 others had to be turned away.
Steve Dahl says, we're going to let everybody in the White Sox Park for 98 cents if you bring a disco record. And we're going to blow those records up in the middle of center field.
So, again, you know, and then it just, for, you know, it's violence. It's crazy what people did to disco back then. So fast forward 10 years later, and you know, music went through the 80s, and metal was a thing, and hair metal and glam metal was a thing, and everybody was into Motley Crue and Poison and those things, which, you know, it wasn't my bag back then, but whatever, people liked it and it was fun, and you go to concerts and you get drunk and you'd hook up. It was just music.
Yeah,
it was just party music. That's all it was. And so
it was pretty awesome, wasn't it, Danny?
It had its day. I'm glad it's over.
And when it ended, though, it ended like disco. It ended
very abruptly.
It ended in shame.
Yes, and then everybody did turn on it.
Yeah. And
I don't accept that.
Well, and again, this is what I don't understand. If you don't like it, now I may have been part of this feeding the monster. Because
I think you were looking back.
I didn't like it.
I turned my back on it as fast as I could.
Yeah. And to hear these guys, what they went through in 1991, 1992, when all MTV played, and this is at a time, too, when MTV was huge, if your videos were being played on MTV, it was more important than being played on local radio.
Right.
It meant you were also being played on local. It was the tail wagged the dog in that fashion.
You couldn't turn on MTV without seeing a Def Leppard, Rat, Quiet Riot, Twisted Sister, Cinderella,
yeah.
Poison, Motley Crue. That dominated music.
All day.
Yeah.
All day long.
Especially during Headbangers Ball, Corby.
You bet your ass.
So, and then...
But the same thing happened to that genre. You had really talented bands and talented musicians writing viable pop
thing.
Songs, but because they all had that image, you know, any label that was close to Hollywood was signing any band that had lipstick and eyeliner.
Yeah. And
no
so,
matter what they could do, because they felt, hey, let's get to be part
more,
of this.
More the merrier.
And it watered it
more
all
money.
Down.
And people, I think they were just waiting for anything. And I'm not saying that grunge is like the greatest thing ever. I just think it came along at the perfect time. It came about at a time when people had had it with that. And they really didn't know what to do.
They didn't know they had it with it until Nirvana became as popular as they did.
So in the Poison Behind the Music, when VH1 used to do Behind the Music, in the Poison one, they talk about that moment mm-hmm. of realization when they knew that, oh my God, it's over.
I walk in a public place and half of them hate you before they ever know you. Don't like what you're about. Don't like what Poison stood for. So they automatically hate you. That's really weird.
7 years after they first hit in 1987, Poison rode the glam rock wave to the top until it bottomed out in the mid-90s. Hype and Hairspray gave way to a radically unglamorous rock movement out of the Pacific Northwest.
Once Nirvana came out, it was kind of the beginning of the end for a lot of the bands.
Flannel shirts was sort of the signal to everybody that this is not that. This is something different. It definitely kind of made everyone that looked the way bands like Poison did look silly all at once.
By 1994, grunge was music's dominant new force, a stripped-down, earnest antidote to the over-the-top pose that Poison had strutted so shamelessly.
Music has totally changed. You know, we're not being played on MTV. I mean, I bitched, I complained, I'm like, what are they, crazy?
It's just like, you know, one minute you're hot, the next you're not.
So their careers were essentially over. Now, again, there would be a resurgence of these bands. You know, all they had to do was wait 10 years, 15 years, and then like...
And you get on the nostalgia tour.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. You just had to wait. But this wasn't about turning on something and just saying, I'm moving on. This was about America looking at, okay, we got this something new. And I think punk rock kind of took over too, and the REMs took over for...
All the college radio bands.
Yeah. And it happened 10 years later, and instead of just saying, okay, we're into this, it was, we're into this, and we also hate you. And then MTV said, all right, not only are we going to cut back on your video plays, it's over. It wasn't, let's just wean ourselves off of this. One day we're playing you 10 times a day, then you're never mentioned again in the history of our network. And the way that the public and radio stations treated these bands, and again, I wasn't into it at all, but I mean, they wanted them gone from the earth. And again, it was embarrassing. Oh my, you were into that? Oh God.
But you're saying it in a way that suggests like MTV controlled it all.
And, well, they did in a way.
Well, but don't they just simply respond to what their viewers are into?
Yeah, to a certain, but again, the viewers were just as, but that audience never, they were still there. The people that were really into those bands, it wasn't like, all right, we hate them now. It was a marketing push to make you think that you hated them.
Yeah, okay, it was a marketing push, but I think a big part of it was that, wasn't it kind of silly that we were all into dudes in plain dress up? Like that soundbite right there, that resonates. It's the new music we're into is a stripped down, more pure version of music
mm-hmm.
versus the over the top, almost pro wrestling, you know, facade that accompanied music at an earlier date. And I think everybody sort of felt like they just took a shower. Like, oh, this, this is what clean feels like. This
yeah,
is...
but then that genre becomes guilty
of
it, too.
Because sure, of
then
course.
Everybody's, oh, wow, look at that. Let me rip up this perfectly good pair of jeans.
100%.
And buy a flannel shirt that I'd never have owned in my life.
Yeah,
and,
I know. It's constantly doing the exact same thing. It happened 4 years later with Hootie and the Blowfish. They have the biggest album of the year. They win every Grammy that's out there. And then suddenly, and I don't know why, I was never into them, but it went from the biggest album of the year to, if you like them, you were the biggest dork in the world. And Darius Rucker developed this massive drinking problem. He was drinking a bottle of Jack a day. The rest of the guys were suicide watch because, like, they're driving down the road, they see bumper stickers that said F Hootie. So it wasn't like you just said, okay, we're done with this. We want to shame you.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
No, it is.
How we just can't let go and just say, okay, that was fun. You guys have a good life. It was, we are going to take you down to the depths of hell to let you know how crappy you were when there's no need for it. It's just let it go, man. Let it go.
It's a fascinating topic for sure because it is repeated again and again and again.
Yeah.
And it totally feels like the cool kids in school setting policy, even though nobody's in school. We're all grown-ups, but it still works that way.
What's the name, Danny, of the Warrant lead singer?
Janie Lane?
Yeah, Jamie Lane.
Janie Lane.
He walks into his record company's office, and they had a warrant poster over the like secretary's desk, huge, you know, for like mm-hmm. a year. And he said he came back there after, and this was kind of after things were starting to go south, and Alice in Chains was up there. They were on that label too. And so they asked the boss, he was like, why'd you take down our poster? And he's like, because you're done. And it was like, okay, thank you, label.
Bye.
That we're on. Yeah, I mean, it's just okay. It's weird. It's very weird.
All right, that was one of my favorite snake pits ever.
Oh, thanks, Danny.
I agree. No, I agree, Danny. That wasn't
really
me, Danny,
it.
From beyond.
That was not me.
All right. Hey, Dak Prescott, huh?
No way.